Good afternoon, everyone. It's a collective bargaining. It's May 23rd, 2017. Do we introduce ourselves or not? I forget, it's been so long.
You have to get us off on a roll, Mike, because it's been so long that we've forgotten, so you're the keeper of the traditions.
All right, well, let's...
we introduced ourselves last time, so I don't think it's necessary this time. I take notes.
We know each other. Right,
all right, there you go, then. Oh, yeah, you have the minutes. Here are a draft of the session minutes from March 20th. Just do it for your team. I think we have one.
Oh,
there's one. It's been a while. Here's five. I only have one left.
Nice of you. Yes? Yep. Nope, we're just getting started.
Here, I'll give you mine to share.
There should be 14 copies.
I'm not sure if somebody has a place.
Well, we can share one.
Every time we do this, I miss Barbara.
I was going to say something. I thought, it's 3 years. It seemed like I shouldn't say anything.
It
doesn't funny
seem
that,
that long, does it? Gosh.
No. I think
she was the tail end of it hasn't been 3 years since she's been sitting.
No, it hasn't
been
quite.
Yeah.
Okay, so 2 years.
She finished up the last full.
Yeah, I think she finished
this one. Okay, you're right. So 2 years, but... It's funny you should mention that, because I was thinking the same thing. I just didn't say it.
Well, they look good to me, but I have never had the best eye for these kinds of things.
Let me just make sure that I've got the same dates down.
Yeah, looks good to you.
They look good to our side.
All right, the minutes look like they're to go.
No.
Good. Thank you, Charlie.
Keep one.
We have an Article 3 for your consideration today and an Article 23. And so why don't we, in just numerical order, start with Article 3.
Give a couple more copies for the end.
Yeah. I don't know how many people are going to share.
Ashley
and
I are
going to
share.
We can share.
Under communications at 3.2, and I'm just going to hit some of the major points, there is the language of placing a link to the local chapter and the link address. And then on the second page, we add language regarding the submission of the list of people designated for release time for the summer. And that's on lines 61 and 62. And what we're requesting is that is a list by March 1st. And the purpose for that, if I have understand it correctly, is that that will allow everyone enough time to put any assignment of a summer course in order by securing a substitute or otherwise.
I think we've talked about that last time.
Yeah, we've talked about that. We've tried to move it up the best we can. Our problem, our constraint is with our elections. That's our...
But that doesn't matter because your elections don't take effect until September, so...
Well, but some of those things are changing, and well, we'll see what we can do. Let's, because we're having some internal changes on those too that
okay.
will be coming pretty soon.
Okay.
And so we understand what the issue is, and
yeah.
we're trying to be as accommodating as we can.
Sure.
Because, you know, obviously it's in UFF's interest that the university runs smoothly and everything runs smoothly.
Yeah.
But part of it is that we've got constraints on our end as well.
Sure. And I guess if someone has a summer assignment or not, I guess the inconvenience would run both ways, you know, for those who have to secure some coverage, but also for those who have an assignment and will no longer have the assignment. And, you know, if it's too late in the year, maybe they've been preparing for the course and dedicating time to getting ready for their summer assignment, then they get released. So,
right.
Yeah.
In the last meeting, Charlie suggested that summer release times were due by May 1st.
No.
Yeah. So now we're asking 2 months earlier?
No, it's always been May 1st.
It's been May 1st.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's see what other. So one of the things that we suggested last time, or we proposed last time, was on 3.1, just including in the contract, which has been common practice for a while, having the right to use an office on the main campus. Is there a, you notice you didn't pick that language up in your proposal.
Well, if I understand our intention, is that you do have an office now, and we have no interest in interfering with that. We just did not think it needed to go into the contract.
Well, we'd like to get as much common practice into the contract as we can, because there's no telling who will be leading the administration in the future, and even where our main campus may end up down the road.
Fear of
who knows?
A fear of eviction.
Well, and I think the building may come down at some point where our office is.
I don't know if it'll come down. It may gently sink into the ground.
Well, it might be modified or renovated or...
One can hope.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else on 3 besides the language on the office, John?
I think those are. Do you guys have any questions?
Mm-hmm. The other change was on line 17 was the locations within a building. We proposed the bulletin boards, and then that language wasn't adopted.
Oh, because we said specific bulletin boards as opposed to locations within a building, just making it more specific.
What problem are you trying to solve there?
It says just shortening the language and making it more specific.
Oh, specific building boards within a building shall be mutually selected? Is that what?
No, just saying instead of locations could be almost anything, like a wall or something.
Oh,
just saying bulletin boards, just because that's what it really is.
Oh, bulletin boards instead of the word locations.
Yeah.
Oh.
All right.
Anything else? One problem is line 6. You struck out subject to the rules of and policy of the university and just started with the UFM. Shall have the right to use that language was enough.
Well, because, yeah. I mean, our... It was basically redundant with the rest on the same basis as they are generally available. It just seemed like that phrase was redundant.
Yeah, I thought I my understanding is that we do have regulations relative to the use of university facilities for these types of meetings, and they are applicable to us. So we just didn't want to, by deleting them, we didn't want to it to appear to someone as if we're suggesting that we're not subject to those practices, right?
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, okay. We were just suggesting that it was redundant because everybody has to follow those rules, and it was in the rest of the sentence there. But
I think that's just something we have that throughout the document, throughout the contract, and I think it's just something that we say the same thing when we're talking to other groups that, you know, everybody's subject to the rules, but it's like a lot of other things. If you don't put it in writing, you know, you want everything spelled out in the contract. We kind of do too on certain things. So, you know, that's just.
It could be, you know, I think, it could actually, and I don't know this for sure, but it could actually touch on two different things, though, and not be necessarily redundant, because one refers to availability, like what space am I allowed to use? Mm-hmm. And the other may be, I think the other has to do with process, like what do I have to do to secure that space, such as contact a particular person.
And you know, we have a lot of rules about use of space and what it can be used for, and if it's used for certain things, it requires certain procedures to be followed, and that's true for anybody that uses the space. But that's was the intent behind that. We just want to make sure that we're kind of covered in that sense.
The policies may extend beyond just the description of availability.
It may
also talk about how one secures the availability. But anyway,
understood.
Anything else on 3? Good. We have a 23. And
here it is. This is a fancy one. It's got a border around it.
Yep. Well, salaries. We were thinking about putting the face of a president in the middle of it, too, but we couldn't figure out which one. So let me track through what I think is the. The first, I can do without even my notes. The first is a promotion increase. From associate to full, or associate instructor to senior, to associate scholar scientist engineer to scholar scientist engineer, university librarian or senior instructional designer, we go to the promotion increases at 10% instead of 9%. We have an across the board increase of 1%, and that's a 23.4A, and there's a 23.4B, which is a one-time payment in addition to the across the board increase, and that amount is defined as $610.
Can you explain why that's in there, why the dates are so far down the road?
Well, yes, because even best case scenario, let's say that we TA today, which I think is highly unlikely, but even if we did, you have to get your faculty to ratify this, and then we have to get the Board of Trustees to ratify this. For you to get your faculty to ratify it in the summer is really very difficult. The next BOT meeting is at the end of July. We're figuring that you're probably not going to be able to get ratification from your faculty till early August, which means the next BOT meeting after that is September, end of September. So we can't get this thing ratified, so that's why we're pushing out the dates for implementation, and that's why we include the one-time payment, because it's just a timing mechanism. Because we're doing this in the summer. That's one of the disadvantages of doing salaries in the summer.
So the, I guess we can look these up online. Does anybody know off the top of their head when the dates are?
For the BOT?
The BOT, yeah.
I think like July 20th. July 20th is the next for the summer, and I want to say September 27th or 28th. I can look it up real quick for the September one.
September 20th.
20th?
28th.
Oh, 28th.
28th,
thank you.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was right around there. And then because there is a merit component, that means we've got to go through all of the, jump through all the hoops to figure all that out, which just takes time. We have to get everybody's evaluations in and then do all those calculations, so.
Which leads us to the next piece, which is a merit increase that's proposed at 1%. And that's at 23.4C. And then on the second page of the proposal.
Can I ask just a couple of questions?
Absolutely,
before
John.
Turn the page?
Yeah, sure.
So the amount for the one time payment, how was that arrived at or calculated?
Calculated the same way we've done it the last couple of years. And, you're certainly welcome, and we expect you to check our numbers, make sure we're accurate on that. But
it's $303.81. So we did round it up.
1%.
Just letting you know.
And while we have expertise here, because I know we'll get these questions, and better for us to have the answers beforehand. How many pay periods is that?
Seven.
Know?
Thank you.
Perfect.
1,500, I think it's 47 faculty, but I'd have to check that for sure.
How many, Charlie?
It's 1,500 something or other. Yeah. I can't remember if it's 47 or 74. I have dyslexia. Something like that.
We were over 1,600, right?
If you count non-unit faculty. Yeah.
No, I thought in our unit we were at over 16, right?
Haven't been, no.
Oh, I thought we were. Maybe I've got a digit off.
1,587 employees.
Well, then, given on any particular day, you might be at 1,600 or so.
Yeah, pretty good. Because people go in and out all the time.
Yeah.
We haven't hit that number yet. Try.
So then the other new insertion is on line 33 and 34, and then it appears again on line 47 with the not OPS in parentheses.
Yes. We had someone who maintained that they were a continuing employee because they were an OPS person. And then on August 11th or so, in between the two implementation dates, between when it ended and when it started, they thought they should get the one-time bonus and the merit pay because they started on a regular position. So I put not OPS to erase that confusion that this poor soul had. That's all.
Because employment relationship, they argued, was opiate.
That they said that I wasn't in an employment relationship. I was working from UCF and I was getting a paycheck from UCF. It was an interesting argument.
Mm-hmm. And an employment relationship is an unusual term of the phrase.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was going to remark as well. All right, well, those are my two questions on the first page there.
You could probably also say, you know, bargaining unit, employed in a bargaining unit position.
Well, except for we have folks who move in and out, so they have a department chair who then comes back in to the union. So, yeah, it's a hard...
It's complicated.
It is complicated. I mean, that's why I didn't offer it. Suggestion. Okay. It was just a remark.
Well, I take my suggestion back. I realize it's lack
it's the
of merit,
best language for
and
the
I'm
for the
taking it back. Then we have equity increases on page 2 under section D. We have equity increases that is provided in a pool of $250,000. What do you say, up to $250,000?
Yeah, by our calculations, based on what we gave out last year and the number of people that are still below these specified minimums that you list here, that will get everybody up to those minimums, everybody that's in your unit up to those minimums.
Missions as successful.
Questions from our team about that?
Mm-hmm. Now, with regard to 23.5, if we're ready to move on, I know that you have proposed language on dates to be used for the consideration and distribution of tips, RIAs, and SOTL awards, and some language on the application requirements that are not picked up here. We're not. That is because we're not ready to counter and to have a discussion on those topics yet.
We're not opposed. Well, in terms of the dates, they're working on those dates, and I know that having talked to Cynthia and her crew, their plan at the moment is to start with tips and then do RIAs and SOTL. So they've just reversed.
So flipped it.
Just flipped it. And the last I looked at what they were proposing, they are like a month apart, so it's a slightly different scale, but they don't have them nailed down exactly yet. So, but that should be coming soon. On the application, two thoughts. I mean, they're working on something, but it also occurs to us that this is the first time we've rolled out this program. I mean, we rolled it out, we agreed to it last year, but we didn't actually implement it. And, you know, it might be, we might want to give it a year just to see how it works, you know, to see if it, just because they do have an application form or, you know, items up on the Faculty Excellence website now that are not that different from what's in here right now, what you've proposed. Maybe it's not such a bad thing. Let's to just see if we can get through a cycle relatively successfully before we start tinkering around with it too much. Just a thought.
Is Mason here? Yeah, Mason's here.
I know, there were some glitches, but they're
I remember him showing me, I think it was an email, right, from your chair explaining how,
but they're trying
how to reply and how to fit things in, and oh my goodness.
But those were things that were, as a result of trying to get it up so fast.
Requirements for applying than the matches that the university procedures.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's a mismatch between the college and
but
the
college has made its own procedures and
But
this document over here, I don't know what else, one of those, we don't need one of those, we need three of these.
But I think that was partly because we were working in between two systems. Now we're, you know, what we did, this is the system now, so, you know.
Well, let's talk about that and we'll see.
Yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, our intent, I think, is the same as your intent, which is to make this go as
smoothly
and painlessly as can.
Because it's
going to
be, just the process of ranking and doing all of the selection is going to be a huge change for colleges. So it's going to be interesting to see how smoothly that goes. Hopefully smoothly. They've had a year to look at
it. All right, any other questions on that particular element?
Can I just ask a sort of general stats? Last year we proposed this sort of equity increases to get people up to a certain level. Are all the people who needed this year a result of new hires that also didn't meet that level?
No. Because you had a very, you know, we had like 0.20% or something, so it... We didn't get everybody up with that pool, but this year with this amount of money, we should get everybody up.
Except for the new hires that are also being hired this year at lower than that difference, which is going to continue to be a problem every year unless something else happens to encourage teams to not offer such low salaries for beginning people.
Well,
so that's a separate matter.
Yeah, that's a separate matter. Yeah, I don't know. I can't address that.
It wasn't just a result of new hires. It's also we need to keep doing this until we get everybody up.
Yeah, but we will, other than potentially new hires, we will get everybody up this year. Hmm. Which is our intent.
And then it looks like the remaining... Everything we had, right? Is there anything else different in the remaining parts?
Not much different. We didn't pick up the giving everybody that's never won one a $5,000.
Because that's one of the biggest sources of inequities in salaries, is that some folks are eligible by name for their assignment and like shifts from administrative shifts. I mean, we've discussed this.
Well, yeah, before. Administrative shifts, that'll be taken care of this year, I think, in a different way. But if you can identify specific faculty or specific programs where that actually occurs, we might look at doing something for those specific people or specific programs. But this was a very broad, everybody who hasn't won one in 5 years gets an automatic $5,000. I mean, you know, that could be you.
No, it wouldn't be me.
But it could be, you know.
If you were different.
Yeah.
If I were different, right.
If you were.
Just for the record, it's not me.
We know that. But I mean, you know, it could be people who absolutely meet the SCH cutoff and just didn't win one, you know, so we're not willing to just kind of hand out $5,000 to everybody who's not won.
And there are some specific categories that we've already identified. So, for example, one of the ones that's really counterproductive from the university's perspective, I think you'd agree with this, is that folks who take a sabbatical then, because you're doing the five-year window, oftentimes that knocks them out because of the SCH requirement for 5 years, because they've got to get past the year when they had zero. because they're on sabbatical for a full year or for a semester or something like that. So there are some systematic issues. And so, you know, especially a person on sabbatical is maybe the best example.
Mm-hmm.
They're enhancing their value to the university. You want to encourage people to do that because then you get the productivity bump from that. But if that's also denying them the ability to get a $5,000 salary, then they're going to think twice. And you don't want to put people into that quandary. You want them to become the best professionals they can be. And so there are some systematic things that we should address.
John, I think that's been addressed in part because we had a big increase in the number of REA awards. So people who go on sabbatical and enhance their research productivity
But it doesn't help with the tip. So the
REA
is open.
Understood. Yeah. Understood. But recognizing that there may be some people that would fall through the cracks, I think the increase in REAs responds to that to some extent.
But it's for a different element of their job.
But if you're on sabbatical, is what he's saying.
I understand.
Because you're right.
But sabbatical helps you with some other awards. So.
Right, it helps with the REA, but it doesn't help with the tip.
Complete time off from teaching for a good, very, very good reason. It does, I think, help you in the REA arena. I think he's right.
But if we can isolate certain things, that makes it easier for us to move in that direction rather than just a broad.
Just a general follow-up. If you isolate certain deserving faculty who fall in that category, how do you handle those who claim that, well, that's unfair?
Who claim what? I'm sorry.
That's not fair.
That what's not fair?
That they weren't also identified as eligible for this award.
Well, I think the point that was made.
That they were eligible, but they just weren't given it?
No, if you identify a certain faculty who are deserving of this $5,000 increase, how do you handle the argument of all those who claim, well, gee, that's not fair to me? I'm just curious.
I think I understand the question, and I might not. So if I answer the wrong question, let me know. What I heard was that there may be faculty who, by the nature of their discipline or their circumstances, are sort of disqualified or ineligible because they don't have the opportunity to qualify by having opportunities to teach large classes. And that's what I think we're looking for, is can we identify people who are excluded from this process because of the nature of their job, as opposed to people who may be simply not teaching large classes, even though they have the opportunity to, or could somehow find a way to obtain eligibility, but they are not taking those steps. So I think it's a matter of opportunity versus no opportunity. Is that fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
I think that's the intent, sure.
Okay.
Okay, then I guess the other question I have that I'm curious about is that the across-the-board salary increase that you're proposing doesn't even match the inflation rate, and yet the latest budget that came from the legislature, which is still apparently sitting on Governor Scott's desk, gave UCF 4.3% increase in its budget for the year. So why is the across the board
$5 million in performance funding, which is what we've been using to finance raises and other programs? We dropped from number one to number five in performance funding metrics this year, which was a big hit to us.
But it's not as big a hit as a 4.3% increase on the base budget.
My understanding, I'm not a budget expert, Don, and we can certainly look into this, but my understanding, just from an experience at another state university where I have gotten into what's happened at the appropriations bill, is that although there's monies that have been appropriated to the state university system over and above what has been in the past, but a lot of that money is designated. too specific for absolute specific purposes to be spent. So, but we can get into that. We can certainly, when, as that appropriation, if that appropriation act becomes law, then we can take a look at.
We have what, about another week to see if the governor is going to veto line items or the whole budget?
Has it gone to his desk yet? I don't think so. Last time I heard, it was not at his desk.
It was not yet at his desk.
Right.
Okay, so the clock hasn't started ticking yet.
Yeah, that's the last time I heard. That was like as of maybe the middle of like last week. It was not to his desk yet. So.
Okay, so we still have a little time to see what he's.
Yeah, because you know he can not only, you know, there's some people telling him to veto the entire budget, and then there's. Some people that are saying veto a line of the budget. He can do either one.
I know, yeah.
So
the whole budget hasn't been vetoed in quite a while.
Right. I would be really surprised if he did that just by because of the number, the way it was passed. It was passed, I mean, the veto-proof majority passed it. Now, whether they would stick to that if he vetoed it, that's another story. But
one of the things that I hear, again, I'm not an expert on all of this, but one of the things that I hear is that there's a fairly large constituency that's asking him to veto the budget. Mm-hmm. And that's basically all of the school districts and school boards of the state and all of the organizations that represent teachers in the K-12 system. And that is such a large part of the overall appropriations that you really can't line out and veto that, you know, or veto that section of it, because if he says we're going to veto this because this has to be funded at a different level, well, he's going to have to take the funds from somewhere else. So it's that, I think, is the.
Yeah, and the community colleges got killed. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, they got
killed. Got crushed.
Mm. So they're really pushing to veto it too. So
yeah,
we'll
yeah.
see.
It's that's the problem is, you know, it's, you know, sometimes a line item veto is we're not going to fund that. So I'm line item vetoing that. There's a recreation center in Punta Gorda that's not getting built. You know, and that's one thing. But when you veto something that has to be funded. He can't fund it differently. He can only veto it, and so that rolls it all back to the legislature. And it's funny because I think the speaker has already said let's have a special session, which is quite unusual. You know, they don't. Cause let's have a special session to talk about medical marijuana. Get that date on everyone's calendar because something else might happen. While we're up there talking about medical marijuana, we might have something else on our plate.
So, any questions from folks?
Did you want to take a caucus, John, or did you want to?
Lee, any questions?
No.
So, our next. Meeting's on June 8th. Right, so 2 weeks. Do you think the procedural things for the awards will be ready by then, 2 weeks, for us to look at?
I think they might be. I can certainly push it. I can see. I can let you know. I sent out an email this morning saying we need that as quickly as possible.
Okay, great.
I had one follow-up question for Sherry. I was curious as to why you think we won't be able to ratify this or get this done by mid-July. That was our hope.
Well, I mean, if you guys can get your faculty to do it, but in the past you have wanted to hold elections in person, and that makes it kind of difficult when a whole bunch of your faculty are gone in the summer, but you know.
Additionally, I mean, this time frame is what we used in the past. That's really what makes sense. We've got to gather all the annual evaluations in order to implement the increase. There's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes in order to make this happen. So we need definitely a lot of lead time to make the raise happen. So just like last time, it's the same timeframe. And it, if you look back at past CBAs, it's October, November, over and over and over again as you look backwards.
Right, but I think in the past we dealt with far more articles. This is only just two articles.
Well, if you have a different thought mm-hmm. on your timetable for what you need to do, please let us know.
I mean, yeah. We were, you know.
We have in the past done mail in or in-person voting, haven't we? Or am I misremembering?
Well, for ratification, we basically...
We usually do ratification.
Usually
my recollection is in-person.
In person,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's a very quick process.
Yeah, but you, I mean, I'm assuming maybe you don't care if only half your faculty are here and you want a ratification.
No, we
vote,
have to give everybody the opportunity to
yeah.
vote. We'd have to do it
yeah.
by
yeah.
Yeah. electronically or mail or whatever is legal uh-huh.
yeah.
and feasible.
Yeah. That, I mean, that was purely our assumption, but,
right.
you know, if you can.
Yeah. Mail is so... not
well,
do
yeah.
it electronically.
And you got
do
some faculty who just
mail,
will not
so.
Open their email during the
summer. People don't
even
look at their mail anymore.
Well, we have folks
it.
Who are out of the country, off the continent,
yeah.
you know, in the middle of, you know, my colleague Will Crampton, who knows when he's going to surface out of the Amazon.
We had a hard mail ratification vote of a UFF contract at FAU, and the date came and went for the vote count, no ballots came back, and we found that all of the mailers in the post office in a back room, a box, went to the mailbox, post office, and they said, they said well, we weren't quite sure what was in that box and what to do with it. Somebody just came and delivered it one day.
So it never went out.
It never went out. It went to the corner of the post office.
Great. Well, yeah, why don't we go ahead and take caucus.
Okay.
Thank you. Probably give us half an hour. Right? So,
sure. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You just
that
let us
right?
know.
Yeah, thank you.
Hour.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think
she
would
say,
oh, no,
no,
go ahead.
Nope, the pickles are gone. I ate them all.
We're supposed to split those.
I kept saying, does anybody want those?
Not when I was in the room.
No, I was making sure.
We've celebrated.
Well, thanks for being patient with us as we talked about everything. So we have a couple of areas that we want to discuss with you.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. The first is with the promotion increases. Mm-hmm. And so our big concern is that you know, this kind of minor increase on the promotion to folks who are going up to the full level is still putting us, we're lagging behind everybody else, and especially some of the poachers, like Florida State and USF are the two obvious ones. And especially with the new hires coming up, that's going to leave us vulnerable.
Did you say UF?
No.
USF.
Oh, USF.
Yeah,
okay.
USF, you know, in the spreadsheet we've got, we just
yeah.
did it by percentage, but actually they should be up at the top of the list.
Yeah, I forgot UF has 9-9. I'm sorry, my
yeah.
bad.
Yeah, yeah. And so with, you know, and with the cluster hires and everything else, you know, and that's, it's just leaving us really vulnerable. And one of our big challenges here is stopping the loss of good faculty, because our turnover rate's pretty high. And then one of our other concerns is with the across the board salary increases not, you know, matching the inflation rate.
I'm not sure I understand.
I didn't do that on purpose.
He did that on purpose.
You know,
you have that queued up.
I know. I didn't do that on purpose.
That
I would like to say I don't understand. Now that's that. We got that on tape. Does Siri need to sign in?
Could you do that again if you tried?
No.
That was pretty good.
Excellent.
You know, so our initial proposal, I think we had 2.7%. Mm-hmm. You know, we just checked the numbers this morning, and my recollection,
2.2?
Yeah, that's the inflation rates come down to 2.2. So we'd certainly be willing to accommodate that. Because that's our big concern, is that faculty who are here and doing their jobs and, you know, teaching really heavy loads by anybody's criteria and doing really well on the research end and really doing quite well in service, too, which often isn't acknowledged much at all.
Yeah.
You know, they shouldn't be going below inflation. And then I wanted to explore a little more about how to deal with the inequities in the incentive awards. And I think it's mostly in the tip. Like you said, the RIA is more not having enough awards for their volume and the expansion of research over the years. And I think we've made a good progress on that in the last couple of years, but it's more the tip. So how do we go about identifying those groups? And then, so we're interested in your thoughts about mechanisms for doing it. Is it by, you know, looking at folks who are being knocked out because they've gone on sabbatical or parental leave or some other form of leave or something like that? So we think just opening up the tips to everybody kind of gets, that addresses that for all except a couple of groups that really don't have, they have unusual assignments, so certain job classifications like the librarians and some others. So any thoughts or guidance on where you're thinking?
I would say we're probably going to have to do this in stages, but maybe the first, and I'm just talking off the top of my head,
yeah.
So, you know, this is...
Yeah, this is just discussion.
Free thinking. Identifying those programs where, because of the nature of the program itself, it makes it very difficult. Now, the sabbatical and parental leave piece, I think that we're going to have to look at that differently, and I'm not sure how we would address that. But, you know, and that may, I think that would take some real, we'd have to gather some real data on that, particularly on parental leave, because we haven't had it that long. So
it's
going to be,
gonna,
it will at some point.
It's going to be
perhaps
the same.
Do it, yeah.
That one I think we could do by maybe shifting the eligibility requirement so it's only looking at those semesters when the person has.
Well, that might be
a responsibility, a teaching assignment.
That might be a possibility.
That might be. So we're doing it too broad now. We need to focus it.
Yeah. I think we're going to have to talk to the people in Faculty Excellence because they run the program, and Risha's here, and we can talk to her and her people about getting us some data on. Because a large portion of the faculty are eligible, but there are certain programs that aren't, so we can, you know, maybe start zeroing in on what that is, what those are, and then also look at the sabbatical piece. That might be the easier fix in terms of just shifting the eligibility times. I don't know.
Sorry to interrupt. There are also the other people who are in a particular program where their particular expertise means that they need to teach the needs to be taught low demand. Only a few students take it, but they have to take it courses and for department needs and so on. But I'm never teaching those courses because they need to be taught, even though these are not eligible. That your comments before that you could perform your assignment. Sometimes the department needs the chair's assessment of where we need you is going to prevent people from being eligible, but not because of the program, but because of the particular expertise they have.
Perhaps. We have to look at that.
Yeah. Well, we know we have that in things like the studio art classes and some
but
of the
I mean,
others.
I'm always a little suspect, and you may be absolutely right, Mason. I'm not trying to, you know, but when people tell me, and I hear this sometimes from deans about faculty overload assignments on a repetitive basis, that there is only one faculty member in the entire universe that can teach this particular thing, and it has to be this person, And, it, you know, if it's on an emergency basis, that may be the case. But, you know, yes, your particular expertise may be in this, but it's not necessarily true that there is nobody else who can teach that. So, I want to make sure. Those are the kinds of things that when I hear those kind of statements, just broadly, I want to drill down a little further into that and see what the...
Again, I mean, I could teach a logic course, but there's at least a few other people in the department who really should teach it for me because that is so not my expertise. I could have, yeah, made me, but those students would suffer compared to the other people who would teach it.
Well, that's relative, too. I mean...
Thank you for the vote of confidence. I would suck at teaching logic, even though
I know in my department, it's a lot of it's because our departments are so small in terms of numbers of faculty. So my department, boy, if Walter Sotero left, he's teaching almost everything at the level of cells on down. We'd be hurting in a major way. I mean, he's like he's the keystone. If he goes, we tumble bad, and we've recognized that for years, but we haven't really addressed it. So we're really, really vulnerable. And plant courses, you know, Dr. Ronnie and Elizabeth Harris, that's about all we have.
I'm not sure that we can address all the ills of the university and TIP program. So.
But I think we have a lot of examples. I think that phenomenon is real in many cases.
Could be.
It's about putting people in the right spot. And, you know, it's like the analogy of, well, you know, to get an award, if I need to play center on the basketball team because I need more rebounds, would you let me play center instead of Lee? Like, that doesn't make any sense. You're not going to win very many games of me in the middle. So
we've got a kind of perverse incentive where getting John to play center, he could do it, but the team's results would suffer us. Whereas in the department, to perform at less than optimal level because people want to play for TIP awards. That just seems a perverse incentive to give departments.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're just exploring what's the mechanism? How do we do this?
I think the input really needs to come from you, because the people who are suffering or not eligible for these TIP awards are not coming in talking to us. It sounds like some of them are coming.
Well, we hear about
speaking.
It, yeah.
Yeah. So help, you know, if we're going to need help, I think, identifying who those folks are and somehow prioritizing perhaps who those are. Because we can't do it all at once. There may be something can be done in stages. But we don't have very good data.
Yeah.
We've got anecdotes that we hear from time to time, mostly from talking to y'all. That helps us a little bit. But we might miss, some key people that we ought to identify. So okay, I'd appreciate some help on that.
Do you have numbers for who's not eligible? Because obviously you have who is eligible, right? Who hasn't been eligible, and you look at what departments or units they are in, and if you identify a high number of particular units or departments that are represented in the excluded category, then that's a good way to identify, you know, to hone in on what's going on in that particular unit or department that is making those people ineligible.
We collated that data a couple years ago, Charlie.
It's been long enough that it has faded from my memory.
Yeah, we could try to maybe update that
spreadsheet.
Let me see if I can find it and then figure out what information to request. My recollection was that the TIP was the easiest one to do. The trying to figure out eligibility on some of the others.
Well, they
was
don't.
Like
they
ballparks.
Have different eligibility requirements that don't.
Yeah, because you've got...
You can teach two people per year and still meet RIA. In fact, probably better.
Yeah.
TIP is more related to your assignment of duties than anything else.
Right.
You can volunteer.
And we don't want to get confused. TIP isn't just about excellence in teaching. The whole purpose of TIP is about teaching the large classes. That's what drives more than any other university.
Getting faculty into actually teaching...
So you don't want
to
lose sight of its mission.
Some other things we want to do too, like getting good quality faculty teaching well in other places.
Right. You don't want to lose sight of that mission, though, because that's really important.
So why wasn't it called the Teaching Large Classes Incentive Program? I pitched this in our caucus.
That's too many letters. It has to be three letters.
TIP.
But I had this conversation with somebody recently who said, you know, they had a friend who had a student at UF, and they went through their entire core curriculum, whatever we call it, the GEP, and never saw a ranked faculty. And they were just horrified by that. And I said, well, that's pretty typical at a large research university. I said, the one thing that makes us at all different is that it's a TIP program, because it forces ranked faculty into teaching some of those classes that they otherwise wouldn't teach. So you actually do have undergraduates here who see ranked faculty before they get into their core major courses.
I wouldn't say forces, I would say whereas motivates.
You don't. It places them in the effort.
Think about the other things we'd like to motivate, though. I mean, there's all kinds of other teaching going around that isn't in lab classes, and we'd also like to be good quality and people paying attention there. In terms of once you've qualified for applying, the only things people look at is what is the quality of your teaching, not what the quality of your teaching is. So in terms of what we're looking for when people are applying for those awards is just plain quality teaching. And the only place where the incentives are stacked towards teaching lab classes is in the qualifying. Could use it to incentivize, and it's already being used to incentivize good teaching in general. It's just that only some people are eligible to show their good teaching and get rewarded for it.
Well, you don't have to teach huge classes in each category. That's some of it. I mean, like, we have awards for graduate teaching, another tip, you can get TIP awards for other things that do allow you to teach smaller classes. But I mean, I see your point, but...
Well, it's trying to address the inequities.
Addressing the other things wouldn't disincentivize people from teaching other classes, but it was still part of the things you can qualify for, say, and you can also qualify in some other ways.
Yeah. Of course, you're arguing with the wrong person here. You realize that.
Well, then you'll take it to the people who need it.
No.
So, John, we're kind of running out of...
I was looking at it, getting nervous. As speaking of teaching, I've got to be in my classroom at 2:30 or my
sorry,
students
are
going
to
my
head.
There goes a tip.
It seems like every year, this year and last year, we're looking at equity for the people who are not being paid well. And we're still hiring people way below that. That each year we're going to be doing this forever, unless we can put in some kind of salary floor that echoes the spirit of those equity increases. Is that even feasible to think about stopping people being hired with a PhD and a couple of years' experience at $33,000 a year?
I have no idea. Well, I mean, that departments set their own hiring salaries, and they base it on market, what they can, what the market will bear.
I have a chair who says my dean has tied my hands, won't give me enough budget to do this. And the dean says the university won't give me enough budget to do this. It comes back to you guys.
Sorry.
It comes back to, all things back to money. And,
if you can figure out
how to squeeze more money out of the legislature,
trying to hire somebody at $33,000 a year, and they get an offer from University of Florida at 47, they're going to take University
of
Florida,
course.
And we're getting the bottom of the barrel every year, and then 2 years later, eventually getting them up to where they would have been anyway. Why not try to attract good people to begin with rather than just pay better the bottom of the barrel people who deign to accept
The assumption is that we're not trying to attract good people. We are, but we have...
We're not doing a pretty good job.
If you can figure out how to get us the level of funding and endowment money that University of Florida has, please help us with that.
We're doing it right here and saying we're going to devote some money to getting those low salaries up to $5,000.
That's true.
Why
don't
we do that at the beginning so we don't have to do that anymore?
So are you suggesting that we take 1% away from, like, across the board and use it in a different fashion?
No, he's
fashion?
Not suggesting
I'm
that.
I'm saying what you're doing here, you do also with the new hires.
He's talking about the equity increase of $250,000 that we did at 0.3% going through the same motions on this issue, recognizing that it is an issue, that people we should be paying faculty more than kindergarten teachers at Orange County. We're doing wonderful jobs, I'm sure, teaching at the university should at least equate to that those salaries.
And we seem to be recognizing that in the equity clause we're negotiating again right now and agreed to last year. Why not just do it at the start and not have to do this kind of making up for bad hiring practices?
Well, you're like spinning your wheels, it seems.
Well, I'd have to look at it. We'd have to look into that.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I encourage you to look at that. That would be a pretty good thing to talk about again.
we will gladly take a look at that.
Yeah.
Is there anything else, John?
That's a good spot to end, I think. I've got to get to my class.
Yeah.
Because I told students don't be late. So And if I'm two seconds late, I'm going to get in big trouble.
The recording robot seemed to keel over, too.
At that point. He's had it, too.
He's had it, too.
We haven't met in 3 months, and 2 hours is more than it could take. Thanks. Is it still recording? Just for the record, kindergarten teachers, at least in Seminole County, are doing a fantastic job, because my son can read. Like, my son could read this language.
Yeah.
He might not understand all the words, but he could read it.
Wow.
I mean, I can't believe it.
Yeah.
I'm flabbergasted. Like, I know I wasn't reading.
Yeah.
It's great
kindergarten.
They do a terrific job. And the constraints the public schools teachers are under, oh, my God. I don't know why they don't know.
I guess I'm doing well and not well.
This teacher got her PhD in education here.
Yeah.
And she's an older post retirement, so she doesn't care about
it. Wow.
The younger teachers say, are you worried you're going to get fired? And she's like, I'm about to.
I can't participate.
She guaranteed all the kids could read.
Yeah.
My son says,
I'm sorry,
all of them can, except for a couple kids.
Bye, see you later.
Yeah.